Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Craddock, pro-rationing created too many questions. Commissioner said one challenge was how to do it so it affected everyone equally. By Mella McEwen. A week after joining with Railroad Commission Chairman Wayne Christian against implementing statewide oil production cuts, Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock reflected on the possibility of pro-rationing in Texas for the first time in 50 years. Speaking with Mitchell Furman, energy and economy reporter with the Texas Tribune, for a virtual interview, she said she believes it was the right decision. I think we made the right decision, in my mind, she said. Look at where we are, what's happened in the last couple of weeks, what was beginning to happen with the industry. The commission was seeing a decline in the number of drilling permits being issued, and in April saw oil production down 200,000 to 400,000 barrels, she said, noting that the April production report was for February output. And there was big news between Friday and today, with Saudi Arabia saying it would cut another 1 million barrels a day and increasing taxes on basic goods, cutting spending on major projects, and reducing some social programs, she said. The commission was already seeing the number of drilling permits being issued by the commission on a downward trend in the fourth quarter of 2019, and expected that to continue in the first quarter, she continued. Now March happened, and the day Governor Abbott issued his state of emergency proclamation was the first day I got a phone call about pro-rationing, she said. The commission, like oil and gas producers, are trying to figure out how to move forward amid plunging demand for oil and refined products and surging supplies that were exacerbated by the Saudi Arabia-Russia fight over market share. My question was, and continues to be, this is something we haven't done in 50 years, Craddock said of pro-rationing. Does anyone know what we're supposed to do? What does it mean? What will it look like? Is it something we should do? If we do something this drastic, how do we do it right? Before the April 14th virtual hearing, at which the commissioners listened to almost 11 hours of testimony from a variety of producers, industry associations, pipelines, academics, and individuals, watched by an estimated 29,000 viewers, and afterwards Craddock said she had been getting a variety of opinions. Everyone does things differently, she explained. Our challenge as an agency, in my opinion, was to get everyone's perspective, good or bad. This industry is dynamic. Everyone does things differently. One size does not fit all, and the challenge with pro-rationing would have been how to do it so it affected everyone equally. As a fee-based agency that is financially supported by fees paid by the oil, gas, mining, and pipeline industries, Craddock acknowledged that the agency's budget is impacted by the downturn. For example, the number of drilling permits the agency issues for a fee is down 60%, she said. Her priority, and that of the other commissioners, is to ensure the agency's 830-plus workers can remain on the job, she said. The information technology upgrades she began implementing when she was elected to the commission 8 years ago are a big piece of that, she said, allowing for online filing of permits and helping with inspections. We're also responsible for cleanups. We have the cleanup and remediation funds, she told Furman. The agency is on track to plug 1,400 abandoned wells this year and remediate more than 200 sites. Still, she noted that Controller Glenn Hager, has warned that all state agencies should be prepared to cut their budgets. We've been through this before as an agency, Craddock said. We've worked out non-essential expenditures like travel. Also, do we need to buy that equipment? Do we need to hire more people? The last time we went through this was 2014-16. As an agency, we were off 20% by the time the oil downturn was finished. It will be a challenge. There are ongoing conversations of how do we completely fund the agency instead of it being in the depths with the energy industry. She adamantly opposes raising severance taxes to help the next state budget, saying fees and taxes shouldn't be increased on an industry that's in a downturn. The state has a rainy day fund that is funded through the taxes paid by the energy industry and currently has $8.6 billion that has not been allocated to the state budget. Those are dollars the industry pays, she said. I've written the controller asking him to delay severance tax collections. It's important to prioritize. Let companies use available dollars to keep their employees and then pay the severance taxes on the back end. I don't think raising fees is appropriate. This article is entitled Midland Police Department, Two Deaths Ruled Murder-Suicide by Stuart Doreen. Midland police are reporting a homicide that took place Tuesday in a central Midland neighborhood was actually a murder-suicide. The Midland Police Department, in a press release, stated that a 44-year-old woman, a food services employee at Fannin Elementary, according to MISD, was stabbed multiple times by a 38-year-old man who took his own life inside a residence one block away from where the stabbing took place. Police reported that at approximately 6:50 a.m., officers with the Midland Police Department were dispatched to the 2400 block of Fannin Avenue near Fannin Elementary School in reference to an unconscious female covered in blood. It was there they found Arasima Diaz. MPD reported she was dead at the scene. Officers discovered that Diaz resided two streets to the north in the 2300 block of Cimarron Avenue and observed smoke coming from inside the home, according to the MPD press release. Responding to the scene at that point were Midland Police Department Crimes Against Persons Detectives, Crime Scene Unit, Traffic Unit, MISD Police, and the Midland Fire Department. Officers on the scene in the 2300 block of Cimarron later located a male identified as Yasser Diaz Sanchez, who committed suicide inside the residence. MPD detectives discovered the victim had been stabbed multiple times by the suspect, and MPD also reported that the knife used was found in the suspect's vehicle parked at the residence. Next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled, Council Agrees to Lock Up Water Source for Long Term. City Manager, just like Council did in 1960 with T-Bar, that is what you are doing today. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council had no problems voting for a water deal that is expected to secure water rights for future generations. City leaders, by a 6-1 vote, decided Tuesday to approve a $261.089 million contract with Fort Stockton Holdings on a water deal that will last at least through 2070. The deal involves partnering with the cities of San Angelo and Abilene to secure the water rights and then build the infrastructure, including a pipeline, for delivery of the water to the three cities. Discussion on Tuesday centered around the prospects of investing in a project that could face lawsuits, as questions about when infrastructure would be built to allow for delivery of water to Midland, and is contingent on the cooperation of other cities. City leaders learned that all three cities have stakes in the deal. City of Midland agenda documents show Midland will collect 53.5% of the water and be responsible for $137.899 million of the costs to secure the water rights. San Angelo and Abilene will agree to pay $77.223 million and $45.966 million for 30% and 17.8% of the water, respectively. City Manager Courtney Sharp also said city councils in San Angelo and Abilene would address the partnership at meetings later Tuesday. He told the council, should one city not agree to the deal, which has been in the works for around a decade, no contracts would be signed, and the council could again take up the issue at a future meeting. It was also stated that a multi-city partnership would serve Midland well, whether one was talking about lawsuits or politics. The consensus became that no one could stop someone else from suing, And that is a possibility when it comes to water. But it is hard with a three-city partnership to see a lawsuit being successful. Officials told the Midland City Council that Fort Stockton Holdings already has the permits in place, and should a production or transportation permit not renew, which renewal is expected, then the contract is void. City documents show Fort Stockton Holdings owns a groundwater production and transport permit issued by the Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District that allows FSH to produce and use 24,800 acre-feet of Edwards Trinity groundwater each year. The regular permit also allows all 24,800 acre-feet of the produced groundwater to be transported and used outside of the boundaries of the groundwater district for municipal use. This contract provides that the City of Midland will purchase all 24,800 acre-feet of Trinity Edwards groundwater from FSH each year on a take-or-pay basis, according to city documents related to the agenda item. The councils in the three cities also are buying the rights, hence take-or-pay, and will have exclusive rights to a water source that is continually replenishing itself, it was said in the meeting. Fort Stockton Holdings does have the ability to sell water in the interim until a pipeline is built and water delivered, but officials said that doesn't take away from the availability of water to the cities in the future. There were some council concerns about paying now while the infrastructure is not in place. City leaders reminded the council that they are basically paying half price to put a hole on the water. The city will pay $0.30625 per 1,000 gallons until January 2025 and $0.3425 per 1,000 gallons through December 31st, 2029. Beginning January 1st, 2030, the rate increases to 55 cents per 1,000 gallons. On January 1st, 2031, and through the remainder of the contract term, the rate increases by 0.5% of the rate in effect for the previous year. And at least Mayor Patrick Peyton indicated he wasn't willing to wait decades to pull the trigger on building the infrastructure, which was the case with the city's T-Bar Ranch deal made in the 1960s. "Our economic future depends on this as much as the oil and gas industry," Peyton said during the meeting. District 1 Councilman Scott Dufford said during the meeting he's not worried about another city pulling out of the deal, as he sees that the opportunity is good enough for the city to go it alone if need be. He also said this deal will benefit the city as it heads into its next renegotiations with the Colorado River Municipal Water District. Recently, Midland is a CRMWD customer city. The dean of all council members also said this is a generational water supply that positions the three cities to be well covered for future droughts. Midland's current water supply also includes the Paul Davis Well Field, located 30 miles north of Midland, and the T-Bar Ranch and Clearwater Fields in Winkler County. "Just like council in 1960 did with T-Bar, that is what you are doing today," Sharp said during the meetings. Fort Stockton Holdings is controlled by the family of recently departed oilman Clayton Williams, who long sought the ability to sell water from his property in Pecos County. Jack Ladd Jr. was the lone vote against the water contract with Fort Stockton Holdings. What the council voted on: the purchase of water supply rights to 28,400 acre-feet of water with an initial term of 50 years with two possible renewals. The city reports that the annual cost will be $2.833 million between 2020 to 2024, $3.192 million between 2025 and 2029, and $5.089 million starting 2030 with an escalator of 0.05% annually to 2070. The contract will continue until December 31, 2070. The city will have the opportunity to extend the contract term until 2090 and then again until 2110. This article is entitled NRC recommends approval of Nuke waste site in Andrews County by Caitlin Randall. In a report released last week, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission recommended approving an application for a high-level nuclear waste storage site in Andrews County. NRC staff said in an environmental impact statement that they recommend granting a license to Interim Storage Partners to store up to 5,000 metric tons of spent nuclear fuel at the proposed site for 40 years. The report outlines the potential environmental impacts of the project, and in most areas assessed by the NRC, the impact of constructing and operating a waste site at the proposed location was found to be minimal. One area assessed by the NRC was the project's impact on transportation. Some Midland County residents and officials, including county commissioners, have previously spoken out against the planned site because nuclear waste would be transported to the facility on Midland's railways. The analysis states NRC staff considered, quote, incident-free transportation, unquote, of spent nuclear fuel as well as transportation involving an accident. Based on an ISP, Interim Storage Partners, analysis of CASC response to transportation accident conditions, releases of spent nuclear fuel would not be expected from the proposed SNF shipments under accident conditions, the report states. In the event an accident does cause nuclear waste to be released, the NRC found the risk to individuals and the risk to the public as a collective to be low. The impact to public health where the site would be constructed was also found to be small, as well as its impact on wetlands, groundwater, soil, and air quality. Vegetation at the site could be moderately impacted by construction of the site, the report states, which could result in loss of habitat for some wildlife. However, the overall impact on wildlife was found to be small, including to the Texas horned lizard and dune sagebrush lizard. Environmental groups previously raised potential impact on these species as a point of contention at a hearing in July. The small amount of potential habitat that is present at the proposed consolidated interim storage facility necessary for dune sagebrush lizard survival, the small amount of disturbance planned in the habitat for fences and mitigation measures that ISP commits to implement, e.g. stabilizing and revegetating disturbed areas, would limit impacts to lizards, the report states. The proposed project is not located within an area designated for the lesser prairie chicken, according to the report. Additionally, NRC staff found that the site would result in moderate population growth of 0.12%, as well as a moderate benefit to the local economy. Although the application is for a license to store 5,000 metric tons of spent nuclear fuel, NRC's staff recommendations took into account ISP plans to expand the facility. In their application, ISP officials stated that they plan to expand in 8 phases to store up to 40,000 metric tons of nuclear fuel. They would need to reapply for approval before each expansion. NRC staff are seeking public comment on the environmental impact statement, according to a press release. Members of the public will have 120 days to submit comments. The NRC will hold a webinar and several public meetings near Andrews County to present their findings and receive comments, the release states. A final environmental impact statement will be published in May of 2021, along with a safety evaluation report. The decision on whether to grant ISP a license would follow the release of those reports. This article is entitled, City Staff Calls for Lower Water Rate, Less Restrictions in New Plan, by Stuart Doreen. City of Midland water pricing set to help with conservation will be changed. The Midland City Council heard during its briefing session Tuesday morning that city staff has proposed changes in its water rates that are less conservation-friendly and changes in restrictions that allow for watering more than 2 times a week. City staff reviewed the current rates, which were put into place in the previous decade during one of the harshest droughts in the city's history. The prices were set to hit residents that used the most, including an additional rate of $54.02 for those who used more than 50,000 gallons of water in a month. It was during the drought that the city called for watering no more than twice a week. The city said a couple of issues came to light since those restrictions and higher rates were put in place. The fact that people watered less put less money in the city's water fund, which meant less cash on hand to pay for infrastructure, including main breaks. Secondly, they said the city was besieged with those wanting exemptions from rate increases or restrictions. City officials told the council on Tuesday there were more than 4,123 water exemptions in place. A new rate system would not allow for exemptions, they said. The city worked with a consultant during this process, and while the consultant called for higher increases and those rates to be put in place earlier, city staff said it is better to see what the impact of the smart meters being installed have on revenue. For that reason, the only change in water rates until 2023 will be those using 50,000 gallons or more will pay $19.65, not $54.02, when hitting that upper tier of use. City staff also came before the council asking for the city to allow for watering to take place 3 days a week. After discussion, city leaders wanted to see what a plan that called for watering 4 days a week would look like. Discussions that took place Tuesday and that are likely to continue until a vote on the water pricing plan takes place will focus on the number of days a resident can water and walking the fine line between revenue and conservation. One issue not likely to come up will be water availability. The additions of T-Bar Ranch and Clearwater Ranch to the city's water resources last decade provided water security for decades to come. On Tuesday, the council also approved a deal that adds a water source in Pecos County. The combination of abundant water supply and lower use means the city isn't using all the water it's contracted to use from the Colorado River Municipal Water District, according to city officials Tuesday, and therefore faces fines from the Colorado River Municipal Water District. City staff recommendations. Reduce upper tier from $54.02 to $19.65 for water use above 50,000 gallons. Remove all exemptions in the billing system. Currently, there are 4,123 in the billing system. Relax water restrictions. Revisit annual increases and wastewater increases in 1 year. City versus consultant recommendations. City, no changes in water increase until 2020 and then a 3% increase. Versus consultant, 5% changes beginning in 2021. City, wastewater changes of 5 and 100% in 2022. Consultant, 15 and 100% in 2021. Current water rates. Residential and commercial water base rate includes 2,000 gallons, $21.61. Current sewer rates, all customers month base rate, $21.79. This article is entitled City, 5 more test positive in Midland, total reaches 112, from staff reports. The city of Midland has started off the new week with 11 coronavirus confirmations in 2 days. The overall count for coronavirus cases in Midland County has increased to 112, according to the city. And on Tuesday, it was announced 2 residents at Midland Medical Lodge and 1 staff member tested positive for coronavirus, as did 2 adolescents, 10 to 19 years of age. Both younger confirmed cases are self-isolating at home. The source of exposure for one was travel within the United States. The source for the other was contact to a known case. The staff member of Midland Medical Lodge was described as a woman in her 40s. She is also self-isolating at home. The residents of Midland Medical Lodge are women in their 70s and 90s respectively. The younger of the two was tested by the state and remains at Midland Medical Lodge. The woman in her 90s is a patient at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland Reporter-Telegram records show 43 Midland Medical Lodge residents have now tested positive for coronavirus. As all five confirmed cases on Tuesday were women, that means the number of women testing positive is in Midland County is 72 compared to 40 men. There is still no change in the number of confirmed cases that have recovered, according to the health department. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 13, 2020. Alice Jane Vales. Alice Jane Vales, 92, passed away in Odessa, Texas on May 10, 2020. She was born Alice Jane Clapchar on August 31, 1927, in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, to the late Frank and Josephine Clapchar. Alice moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where she would meet the love of her life and future husband, George Vales. Alice and George would go on to marry on November 15, 1952, and raise their two kids, Patricia and Gerald. Alice was preceded in death by her three sisters, four brothers, and husband George. She is survived by her son Gerald Vales and his wife Suzette of McHenry, Illinois, her daughter Patricia Ares and son Sam of Odessa, Texas, her four grandchildren, along with seven great-grandchildren. A private memorial is being planned at a later date by the family to celebrate Alice's life. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Charles D. White. Please join our family in prayer and celebration of the life of Charles D. White. Charlie left this world to go home to our Lord on the afternoon of May 9, 2020 at Covenant Hospital, ending his battle with cancer. He was born in Lubbock, October 20, 1955, to Charles D. White and Sally Van Ness White. Charlie spent most of his life in Midland, Texas. Charlie is preceded in death by his parents and brother Danny White. He is survived by his wife Virginia White, sister Leela Hunt and husband Donald, brother David White and wife Lynette, daughters Shannon Mihalik and husband John, Tatum White, Haley Giuseppe and husband Al, Ivy Bryce, Valerie Stanley and husband Ryan, sons Chris Compton and Justin Compton. He is survived by 17 grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, a slew of nieces and nephews and their families who all love him. Family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, May 14th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, May 15th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. The live stream link is at www.npwelch.com. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, May 15th at Kermit Cemetery in Kermit. Semper Fi, Charlie. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dinah Cade Thomas. Dinah Cade Thomas, age 85, of San Angelo, passed away on May 11, 2020, surrounded by her family. Dinah was the firstborn of twin daughters to Herbert M. and Ethel Burns Cade on December 5, 1934. Dinah married Bill Thomas in Woodrow, Texas in 1955. The couple was blessed with daughter Candy and a son Terry. Dinah was preceded in death by her parents, a brother H.M. Jack Cade Jr., her sister Mary Helen Brescier, her husband Bill of 61 years, and her daughter Candy. She is survived by her son Terry and his wife Russell, her twin sister Sue McElroy, four grandchildren, seven great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and friends. There are no services planned at this time. However, Dinah will be buried in Midland, Texas at Fairview Cemetery next to her husband. The family suggests memorials be made to the Candy Bussell Scholarship Fund, care of Carlsbad Foundation, 116 South Canyon, Carlsbad, New Mexico, 88221-9989. Arrangements are by Robert Massey Funeral Home in San Angelo. Please sign the guest register online at www.robertmassey.com. Michael D. Kaufman. Michael D. Kaufman of Midland, Texas, passed peacefully away into the arms of his Lord and Savior on Monday, May 11, 2020. Mike was born March 23, 1951 in Wichita, Kansas, to Robert Bernard Kaufman and Betty Jean Young Kaufman. He was raised in Augusta, Kansas, graduating from Augusta High School. Mike married Leela Jones Seagull Kaufman on June 10, 1973, and together they entered the Air Force life. Mike is survived by his wife Leela, son John Kaufman of Katy, Texas, daughter Beth Kaufman Garza and husband Bo Garza of Midland, Texas, son Mark Kaufman and wife Michelle Tate of Midland, Texas, grandchildren Katy, Carly, and Terry Kaufman, and Tommy, Andrew, and Aubrey Garza. He is also survived by brother Bob Kaufman and wife Carol Kaufman of Carrollton, Texas, brother Ken Kaufman and wife Tara Kaufman of Rathdrum, Idaho, and multiple in-laws, cousins, nieces, and nephews. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to First Baptist Church Benevolence Fund, his cherished ones, the Field's Edge, or M.D. Anderson. The family will receive friends on Wednesday, May 13th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory, 3800 North Big Spring, Midland, Texas. Due to the current restrictions from COVID-19, a private family service will be Thursday, May 14th at 11 a.m. Livestream will be available at www.npwelsh.com. Burial will be in the columbarium at the United States Air Force Academy, Colorado Springs, Colorado, at a later date. Honorary pallbearers will be members of Cadet Squadron 30, Class of 73, United States Air Force Academy. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Sharon Juanice Lewis. Sharon Juanice Lewis passed from this life, entered eternal rest on Saturday, May 9, 2020, following a brief illness. Sharon was born April 3, 1952, in Midland, Texas, to Earl Lewis and Lula Parks Lewis, and attended public schools in Midland, graduating from Midland High School in 1970. Sharon was preceded in death by her parents, Earl and Lula Lewis, sister Marilyn Lewis, and brother Jason Lewis. Sharon is survived by her brother Larry Lewis and his wife Phyllis, and sister Trina Lewis, all of Midland, nieces Miracle Dorn of Midland, and Chloe Lewis and Candace Lewis, both of Austin. Sharon is cherished by a host of loving family and friends. Sharon's family has honored her request for a private internment. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Death notices. Linville Mosby Sr. Linville Mosby Sr., 88, of Midland, passed away May 8, 2020. Services are pending with Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, May 13th. ORMC nurse recounts Boston Area Hospital. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. When a call for help was issued last month by a fellow Stewart healthcare facility in the Boston area, Odessa Regional Medical Center Medical Surgical Clinical Coordinator Marissa Sierra was among those who answered. Sierra, the clinical coordinator for the medical surgical department, and several of her fellow nurses were stationed at Good Samaritan Medical Center in Brockton, a suburb of Boston, for a month, where there was a surge of COVID-19 cases. ORMC Chief Nursing Officer Carol Cates said five nurses and two respiratory therapists came to the hospital's aid. Cates said one of the respiratory therapists works full-time at Scenic Mountain Medical Center, another Stewart hospital in Big Spring, and as needed for Odessa Regional. Along with Sierra, Christy Klumpler, Melissa Stevens, Elena Dobson, and Rachel Holmes left the weekend of April 10th for Boston. The nurses are from ORMC's Medical Surgical Operating Room and Critical Care Units. The respiratory therapists are Tony Proper and Teresa Yarborough, who works as needed for ORMC. Sierra, who is married and has three children and two grandchildren, worked 12-hour days on the night shift. She worked 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for 19 out of 30 days. Quote, "They were very long days," she said. "I worked a COVID unit-only floor, so every patient that I had had COVID or had tested positive for COVID at some point of their admission," she added. She said they had enough personal protective equipment at Good Samaritan, but it seemed like there were certain nights that it took a little longer to get gowns. Quote, "But there was never a night that we were really without anything. I would have to wait until the gowns became available before I could go into the rooms." Quote, "When we first got there, it was their busiest time, and then it started to slow down before we left. A lot of us were kind of in shock. Whenever we first got there, we found out that the entire hospital had over 130 positive COVIDs. It's like we couldn't really wrap our minds around it. It's like more than Midland Odessa has put together, and that was just a small portion of this area of the Boston area that was hit. Then we found out that most of the patients in this hospital were all COVID positive. This was where a lot of them were going. We were kind of all in shock," Sierra said. Her mask broke one night, so she had to wait for a supervisor to bring her another one. Quote, "It took her over an hour, so I had to wait to go into my patients' rooms until I got PPE, but I think that was normal. They had to protect all their equipment just because we do go through it so much," Sierra said. She had to wear an N95 respirator mask for every shift, and one mask lasted about four shifts. She added that they were expecting more COVID patients as well. As of Tuesday afternoon, Midland County had 107 confirmed cases and 12 deaths, the Midland Memorial Hospital website said. Hector County, also as of Tuesday afternoon, had 100 cases and 4 deaths, according to the county website. Sierra said they didn't really get a heads-up or orientation when they first arrived, except being told what hospital they were going to. They were shown how to do the hospital's computer charting and were oriented to the floor they were on so they knew where things were. Quote, "Nobody really prepared us for the amount of patients they had because this was normal for them. They had already been dealing with COVID for up to 4 weeks prior to that," Sierra said. "This was the norm for them," end quote. Senior Center's meals resumed. Hearing that many Hector County senior citizens may need more attention than they are willing to admit, Hector County Commissioners on Tuesday voted to reopen the Northside Senior Center at 1225 Adams Avenue for only the curbside dispensing and home deliveries of meals. Senior Center's director, Donna Greaves, told the court that she and her staff had been calling seniors to check on their welfare, but that may be inadequate. Quote, "They say, I'm good, I'm okay, I don't need anything, but we need to be able to see them to know they are really okay," Greaves said. She said a reinstatement of meal services would also ensure that the seniors were eating at least one good meal a day. In other business, the commissioners tabled consideration of their vendor food services contract with Summit Food Services for the rest of this fiscal year and to provide in-house meals for seniors next year. Chief Sheriff's Deputy Eddie Mancha got permission for inmates to make 2 free 5-minute phone calls per week, explaining that visitations were stopped with the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic and that the calls will cease when visitations are resumed. The retirement of K-9 Ike into the care of Sheriff's Lieutenant Richard Dixon was approved, as was an application to the National Police Dog Foundation in Camarillo, California, to replace her. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons was 20 minutes late for the 10 a.m. meeting. The court also, appointed Dr. B.A. Genadu, the local health authority for the county health department, and named Amy Hendrick, a trustee of the Permian Basin Community Centers, for a 2-year term starting today. Approved the $266,000 purchase of a truck with a grapple roll-off system for the Public Works and Environmental Enforcement Departments, with Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton saying, quote, "This will go a long way toward improving the county as far as illegal dumping," end quote. Enacted the court's calendar for writing the 2020-2021 budget. Extended online auctioneering services. Amended its software-defined wide area network to include the County Coliseum and Barnes. Voted unanimously to hire municipal planning consultant Craig Farmer of Dallas to update the county's subdivision regulations after County Assistant Purchasing Agent Lucy Soto said bids should be advertised for before the contract was awarded. Agreed to apply to the Criminal Justice Division of the Governor's Public Safety Office for a U.S. Justice Department grant for coronavirus funding for the Sheriff's Office. Approved hiring a department coordinator for the County Highways and Streets Department to help with the multi-million dollar roads improvement program it has undertaken. Okayed the county's investment report.
ECISD names top 10 grads. The top 10 students at Ector County's 5 high schools were announced Monday. Here are the ranks, names, GPAs, parent names, and colleges the students plan to attend. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa. 1. Clarissa Garcia, 5.899. Parents Edna and Annabelle Gaetan, UT Austin. 2. Avery Vega, 5.635. Parents Adrian Vega and Catherine Vega, UT Austin. 3. Sadie Janelle Galvan, 5.515. Parents Raquel Galvan and Isidrio Galvan, Odessa College. Arwen Weeks, 5.455. Parents, Reverend Doctors Dawn and Joe Weeks, UT Austin. Manatala Kamel, 5.415. Sadia Metawea, UTPB. 6. Oliver Lyric Martin, 5.408. Parent Robert Martin, Southwest School of Arts. 7. Karina Granado, 5.404. Parents Margaret and Luis Granado, Texas Tech. 8. Adamari Dominguez, 5.116. Parents Maria Dominguez and Alejandro Dominguez, UTPB. 9. Christian Joel Cordova, 5.107. Parent Lilia Cordova. 10. Joseph Ramirez, 5.030. Parents Mary Ramirez and Samuel Ramirez, UTPB. 10. Holly Michelle Brauchy, 4.65263. Parents Joe Price, OC. Permian High School. 1. Chandler Chestnut, valedictorian, 5.915172. Parents Desiree Cadell and Kane Chestnut, Texas A&M. 2. Julissa Garcia, salutatorian, 5.675926. Parents Jesus and Christina Garcia, Texas Tech. 3. Jennifer Atayala, 5.675424. Parents Chakravarti Athayala and Sukhaveni Athlaya, UTPB. 4. Abigail Gex, 5.570175, parent Michelle Gex, UT Austin. 5. Ashton Marie Aranda, 5.561034, parents Tennille and Fabian Aranda, Texas Tech. 6. Bonnie Forrester, 5.516200, parents Patricia Forrester and Jody Forrester, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. 7. Haley Douglas, 5.499455, parents Jennifer and Gary Douglas, the University of North Texas. 8. Isis Corral, 5.491864, parents Guadalupe and Manuel Corral, UTPB. 9. Samantha Delgado Vasquez, 5.46300, parents Betuel Delgado and Myra Vasquez, UTPB. 10. Sydney Anglin, 5.456379, parents Susan Anglin and Robert Anglin, UT Austin. Odessa High School. 1. Jason Zubia, valedictorian, 5.769844, parents Socorro and Luz Elena Zubia, UT Austin. 2. Angelica Carrillo, salutatorian, 5.753077, parent Anna Carrillo, Harvard University. 3. Raul Navarras, 5.710159, parent Raul and Claudia Navarras, UT Austin. 4. Evan Haley, 5.678182, parent Rhonda Haley, Princeton. 5. Vivek Prasad, 5.605156, parents Kalpana and Suresh Prasad, UT Austin. 6. Zoe Herndon, 5.496377, parent Amy Herndon, UT Austin. 7. Dalila Olivas, 5.418485, parents Lori and Ildefonso Olivas, Abilene Christian University. 8. John Dean, 5.394286, parents Patty and Jonathan Dean, UT Austin. 9. Esperanza Hinojos, 5.384500, parents Christina and Marco Marquez and David and April Hinojos, University of North Texas. 10. Cristobal Ortiz, 5.375714, parent Maribel Ortiz, University of North Texas.
COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Hector County confirmed cases, 100. Hector County negative, 1,464 out of 1,683 tested, with 119 pending. 4 deaths. Midland County, 107 confirmed cases out of 2,160 tested, 12 deaths. Texas, 41,048 confirmed, with 538,172 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,133. U.S. cases, 1,342,594 total confirmed cases, and 80,820 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Saying thanks. The commemorative Air Force High Sky Wing will be flying a formation of historic warbirds over the cities of Odessa and Midland at 9 a.m. today. The event is part of A Salute to West Texas. The warbird formation flight will consist of 10 aircraft, which will launch at about 9 a.m. from Midland International Air and Spaceport. They will then fly over the cities of Odessa and Midland. The flight is scheduled to last about 1 hour. Streaming grads. Graduation ceremonies for Ector County ISD's class of 2020 will be virtual this year, but they will contain some of the same elements students would have experienced in a face-to-face event. Dates for the graduations are May 22nd and May 23rd, and they will be broadcast at the same time they would have actually been held, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Permian High School is on May 22nd, and Odessa High School is May 23rd. The graduations would be live if not for coronavirus. The one for Odessa Collegiate Academy is at 10 a.m. May 22nd, the graduation for OC Techs at noon May 22nd, George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa at 2 p.m. May 22nd, and Permian High School at 8:30 p.m. May 22nd. Odessa High School's graduation will be at 8:30 p.m. May 23rd.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. Section A. Students honored for writing excellence. Midland. This spring, Midland College is proud to recognize and honor writing excellence with two contests, the MC Nonfiction Writing Contest and the Hilda Simmons Levitt Poetry Contest. The MC English faculty were very impressed with the entries for both of these contests. William Christopher Brown, MC Department Chair of Language Arts, Philosophy, Humanities, and Technical Writing, said, "We applaud the winners' achievements and their fortitude to persevere and excel, especially during the obstacles placed upon them by the COVID-19 pandemic during this semester." Nonfiction Writing Contest. The Nonfiction Writing Contest is a new competition this year and includes categories of narrative nonfiction, feature stories, and research essay reports. In the narrative nonfiction category, Michelle Sanchez won first place with What He Taught Me. Faith Dolan won second place with Disability. And Christian Bell won honorable mention with Essential Lessons in Nature. Angel Quiñones Bustamante's work entitled Lifelong Mentorship won first place in the feature stories category. Allison Murillo Rankin won second place with A Teaching of Faith, and Henna Patel's What My Best Friend Taught Me received honorable mention. The winners in the Research Essay Reports category were Ariel Brown, first place, Praxiteles, Intentional Sexualization or Projection, pages 52 through 65. Jada Strilchuk, second place, Behind the Scenes of an 80s Classic, pages 9 through 13. And Priscilla Lopez, honorable mention, Processes for Land Technicians, Landmen, pages 66 through 71. Hilda Simmons Levitt Poetry Contest. Stanley Levitt established the Hilda Simmons Levitt Poetry Contest in 1988 to honor the memory of his wife, Hilda Simmons Levitt, who took poetry writing classes at MC for many years. The Levitt's daughter, Carol Schwartz, continues to underwrite the contest. Kyra Hendricks won the grand prize and a cash award of $600 for her poems, Home and Human. Camilla Justice wrote Daughter of an Immigrant and won second place of $400. Gabrielle Rubio won third place for $200 for Catchin' Feelings and Trapped. Fourth place and $100 went to Marisol Tarin for In the Night. Rachel Howard and Jaylene Partida won honorable mention for Serenity and For Granted, respectively. Lawrence Musgrove, professor and chair of English and Modern Languages at Angelo State University, served as the judge for this year's Hilda Simmons Levitt Poetry Contest. Perkins Grant helps TSTC students. With help from a Carl D. Perkins Career and Technical Grant, Texas State Technical College student Rebecca Fortuna does not have to worry about gas money. Through the grant, Fortuna is able to travel from Rotan to Sweetwater to study wind energy technology. Without the grant, Fortuna said she might not be able to complete school. If it was not for this grant, I would probably have to work more just to pay for gas, she said. I saved a lot of money driving back and forth, even with gas prices fluctuating. Every little bit helps me. Michael LaRue, coordinator of retention services for TSTC's West Texas campuses, said helping with transportation costs is not the only benefit of the grant. The Perkins grant also allows non-traditional students to receive funding for childcare. We also have a lending library available where students can borrow books or tools for their courses, he said. We want to dedicate our money to our assistance programs. Fortuna, 35, learned about the grant opportunity by talking to her classmates. It was not a difficult process. With a lot of grants, it is a large essay, but this was not that way, she said. Michael helped me through the entire process. She has even paid it forward by telling other female classmates about the grant program. I wanted to help get the word out that this is available, she said. LaRue said funding helps relieve some stress on students. I hope people take advantage of this program. One of my main goals is to get as many students to apply for funding as possible, he said. To receive funding, the student must be in good academic standing, be classified as full-time, and take classes on campus. We accept applications each semester, and students are eligible to reapply, LaRue said. It is rewarding because it helps a lot of people.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.